The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What is up, 960theref.com? 960theref listeners, social media, wherever you find this podcast. Thank you so much for joining this edition of The Crossover. Sam Franco and Chris Brame coming at you. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes because it makes your life a lot easier in terms of finding this podcast. It just gets automatically delivered to you whenever we upload it. So subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a nice review because, you know, you listen to us, so there's obviously something that's bringing you here, unless you just hate us.
Yeah, or even if you don't want to, like, type out a bunch of stuff, just click on five stars and you'll be golden that way.
Absolutely, absolutely. We would greatly appreciate it. All right, lots to get to on this edition of The Crossover. We'll talk Georgia, their historic win in Neyland Stadium against Tennessee. We'll also talk about the Falcons and just a lot of bad luck befalling them this past Sunday in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium against the Buffalo Bills. And we'll talk about the Braves, who are just a red-hot mess of a dumpster fire right now, with some problems in the front office. So plenty to get to on this episode, as I just said. But diving right into it, the Dogs go to Neyland Stadium, 41-0 victory, really putting what a lot of people think might be close to that final nail in Butch Jones's coffin. I know that he hasn't been fired or anything, but the pressure certainly mounting on him, and string together another loss here or there, a bad loss. You know, that they still play Alabama. I don't even know what the line's going to be on that game. They might be a 30-point dog in Tuscaloosa. But Butch Jones probably not long for Tennessee, especially with all of his paranoia and just the way that he's been acting.
Well, and I think the look of the team the last 2 weeks also, and, you know, this isn't intended to take anything away from what Georgia did there Saturday, but, you know, Tennessee just, it was like a circus out there Saturday. I mean, they got an interception, they picked off Fromm, and the next play, their center snapped it off his butt. And the longest play they had, they ended up fumbling at the end of it, and it looks like a team going back to even the week before when they only beat UMass at home 17-13, and then UMass last week gave up 58 to Ohio. That's a team right now that's just not even into it. And, you know, if the players aren't into it, maybe they don't they're not into the coach anymore, and there's just something not connected there. And I think there's at this point, almost no way he returns as Tennessee's head coach. Because, like you said, they definitely have at least one more loss coming up, and that will be when they go to Tuscaloosa. But given the fact that they just lost 41-0 to Georgia a week after beating UMass 17-13, they're going to lose other games this season, too. That's going to be their only loss, the Alabama game.
No, certainly not. It's definitely looking like things are going in the very wrong direction for Butch Jones there in Knoxville. And talking about Georgia's performance in this game, I mean, the defense was suffocating, you know, holding Tennessee to very minimal gains in both the running game and the passing game, and Georgia really just smothering Tennessee, not allowing them to get anything going. And then you look on the offensive side of the ball, and it wasn't Jake Fromm's best day passing or anything. I believe 7 of 15 for a little over 80 yards. But he does get the two rushing touchdowns, and I think one of the things you have to do when you're comparing and contrasting the styles of Jake Fromm and Jacob Eason, one thing that goes into that, I don't think those are touchdowns if Jacob Eason is in the game. I mean, we saw his mobility or lack thereof last season and even this season in the very small amount of time we got to see him in that first game against Appalachian State. But Jake Fromm just kind of, you talk about that it factor, that ability to make plays and the ability to lead a team to victory, and he just feels like he has that. It's such a cliche in sports because you don't really know what that is or what it is, but there's just something about Jake Fromm that you feel comfortable about the Dogs being able to go forward and win some of these games. Maybe it's just the way that he kind of commands the offense.
Well, here's what Fromm has, is a superior defense and special teams Eason did not have last year.
This is fair.
And, I mean, if you go back, Fromm turned it over twice at Notre Dame, averaged less than 5 yards in attempt against the Irish, and completed, I think, less than half his passes, too. if he had last year's defense and special teams, we're 4-1 right
now. Yeah, you're right.
So, but look, Fromm is playing well as a freshman. But, you know, right now, I mean, the leading the charge is what this defense is doing.
Of course.
And for the last 2 weeks, I've gotten to halftime of Georgia games. This week it was 24-0 mm-hmm. this week, right? Mm-hmm. And then it was 14-3 against Mississippi State. And by the time I got to halftime, and I texted Jeff both weekends and said, these games are over.
They're over. No,
they're
not, exactly.
Mississippi State and Tennessee were not scoring on Georgia's mm-hmm. defense. The only way they were scoring and getting into the end zone was either A, in garbage time, which State almost did, or an offensive turnover or special teams or a non-offensive touchdown.
Oh, yeah. Right now, you feel like if Georgia's up double digits in a game, the other team's not going to be able to come back
yeah.
because the Dogs are going to smother them with their defense, and that's exactly what they've done. As soon as Mississippi State had to start throwing the ball around, which is not their strength, they went back-to-back drives, ending in interceptions, you know it was over because they lead with the run and Nick Fitzgerald getting out and running. And when he's having to drop back and pass the ball vertically down the field, you've gotten them completely out of what they want to do. And the same with Tennessee. They couldn't run the football, and Georgia was able to, you know, get great pressure on their quarterback, and it helped Georgia control that game from start to finish. And one thing that we're seeing now that we didn't see towards the end of Coach Rick's era here in Athens is, you know, it's funny because I use this saying that Coach Rick came up with, finish the drill. Well, that's what Georgia's doing now. They're playing four quarters. They're not playing only a good half or a good quarter here and there. They're playing well the entire game.
No, it's relentless, and they're motivated, too, now by, hey, you know what? Let's not give up any touchdowns.
Right.
And so, you know, even at the end when, you know, Georgia had its backups in against Mississippi State, but there was still that determination to don't let them into the end zone. And 31-3 at the end of that night looked a lot better than 31-10. But, you know, like last week, based on the recent history of the series with Tennessee, that Georgia had gotten out to big leads and blown them and the games had all been close – you know, my prediction was jokingly like Georgia was going to – I said Georgia's going to race out to a 27-0 lead and then hang on to win 27-21. So Saturday at halftime, I get a text from Jeff, and it says, oh, my gosh, if you're right about this, then I might not be in Monday, because at that point it was 24-0. So if somehow Tennessee had rallied in that game and come back and made it close or even won the game, then Jeff wouldn't have been in good shape. But I sent him I said, you know what? Georgia had all the points they need in this game when it was 3-0 after that first hot rod field goal, because just Tennessee could do nothing on offense, and Georgia's defense was every bit the reason why.
Absolutely. And, you know, that Georgia defense, I mean, what more can be said about it? Roquan Smith with 11 total tackles in this game. You had 3 sacks, I believe Julian Rochester, Davin Bellamy, and the last one's escaping me. It might have been Trenton Thompson before he got hurt.
I don't think it was Thompson, because he still doesn't have a sack this year.
Oh, it wasn't him.
Did J.R. Reed get one? I don't remember who it was either, but that's, you know, one thing about that Tennessee offense. You know, they were 5th in the country heading into last week's game in sack rate on offense. They were doing a pretty good job protecting their quarterback. After last week, they dropped to, it's either 14th or 15th now. I don't remember exactly where when I counted, but they went from top 5 to down into the teens. So
it's a pretty big tumble.
Yeah. So Georgia did a number of finally breaking through there and putting some heat on Dormady, and it showed. I mean, he never looked comfortable. You know, plus when you're the Volunteers and you know you can't run the ball either and you're struggling to pass, it was just complete and total domination by Georgia. What they've done the last 2 weeks is – it might be the best two-game stretch they've ever had.
Ledbetter was the third.
Okay, time. Yeah.
But, yeah, that's still just very impressive what Georgia was able to do. But just looking across the defense, I mean, and how many different guys are making plays. I mean, obviously, Roquan Smith, I mentioned it earlier, if he's not the best linebacker in the country, he's certainly in the top 3. You would think he's going to be a big contender for the Butkus Award when things are all said and done at the end of the season. But just – you mentioned J.R. Reed a second ago. How big of an impact has that guy had as another one of these graduate transfers who is playing some of the best football at his position in the country? I mean, that almost every Georgia defender that's getting major minutes is playing, or major play counts, is getting some of the best play in the country out of that position.
It's enormous because, you know, coming into the season, I think we all loved the potential of Georgia's front seven, but were maybe a little sketchy on the secondary. But, I mean, the secondary is delivering too, and Reed is a big reason and a big part of that. But, you know, DeAndre Baker has had a couple of good games. You know, Malcolm Parrish is getting back healthy. He had a big tackle the other day. That's the other thing that's so impressive about this defense is there's not a lot of yards after contact. And when you think about Kelly going into last week's game, was 60% of his yards were coming after contact.
Right.
And he was just getting stuffed at the line of scrimmage just
only
time
44
and time
yards.
Again.
Yeah. And that's the thing, too. We've talked about this before. One of that the things that falls under the change of culture that Kirby Smart always talks about is being a more fundamentally sound football team, not allowing teams to have second chances or yards after contact. And you just look at some of the hits this year and how technically sound they are, wrapping up, you know, not arm tackling. I'm talking getting full, you know, technique in and taking guys down. And I always, one of the best hits of the season, Aaron Davis laid on one of the Mississippi State players, and that's going to be burned in my brain for as long as Georgia's continuing to do well, and we're talking about this defense. I mean, he hit him straight on, wrapped around him fully, and just plowed him into the ground. And it's like Georgia's continuing to do that, and as you say, they're not giving up those yards after contact, and that's huge. And Georgia just stuffing people, not allowing anybody to get those second and third chances and opportunities. And that's huge because it deflates a team. And that's what we've seen against Mississippi State and Tennessee. Both of those teams just didn't really have anything left in the tank.
Well, and what you said there, too, is how is the wrap-up part. And it feels like somehow Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart have gotten these guys to buy into don't go for those kill shots. And
no, just
actually,
put them on the ground.
Yeah, wrap up and tackle. Because I still – and I know we're talking about almost 10 years ago now, but the scene where – Rashad Jones just tried to, like, knock Jonathan Dwyer out of bounds on the sideline that 08 Tech game, and Dwyer just ran down the sideline and scored a long touchdown.
Like, yeah.
You know, because you're just going for the big kill shot, the big hit that's going to get you on TV. Hey, look at this. But you know, this Georgia defense, these guys are wrapping up around the waist, around the legs, and bringing guys down.
As we're in our studio here, and a giant spider is crawling around on the table.
Yeah.
Just going to go ahead and take
him smash it
out of his misery while we record this episode. See, we're doing this live. We're doing
live. We'll do it live.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out to Bill O'Reilly there. But, no, I totally agree that this Georgia team is bought into the team-first concept. And, you know, it seems like such a lazy comparison to make because Kirby Smart came from Alabama. But it really is feeling like that. I mean, that this team is all one unit, you know, and everything is for the G. It's not for themselves, and it really is starting to feel more and more like that.
Well, so far it's not beating itself with horrendous special teams play, but again, I mean, the defense has been so good that when Georgia's offense has turned it over this year, it has ended up not mattering, and that is. You know, and that just all the credit goes to the Dogs defense, which is hunkering down in a couple times in opponent's territory. But when you think about how well the defense has played, going back to the App State game and even the Notre Dame game, the only touchdowns they were giving up then were after turnovers and having to inherit a possession on a short field there. But that's the big thing when you thought about you think what Alabama's done is just being so fundamentally sound and not beating itself. I mean, Alabama hasn't turned the ball over yet this year. Not once. And how many games have they played? Four now? Florida State, then Fresno, Colorado State, and then, well, Vandy. So I guess they've played five games too. And they have no turnovers in five games so far. And that is just a team that doesn't beat itself and rarely does.
Yeah, and that's what you kind of have to emulate and have to try to become, and that is certainly what Georgia seems to be doing right now. Before we jump to the Falcons here, any reason to worry about Vanderbilt this weekend?
No, I mean, I think I've gotten to the point where, at least with this team, and as battered as we've been in the past when it comes to Georgia and genuinely needing to be concerned about a game like this, kicking off at noon, coming off two big wins that were going to be a lot more emotional and supercharged, and the crowd way more into it than what the Dogs are going to face in Nashville. But I would be stunned if the game was tight at this point.
Me too. Georgia is not messing around, man.
No.
They are not messing around. They're going to, if anything, I feel like they're going to go up there, do pretty much what they've done to Tennessee and what they've done to Mississippi State, come back to Athens, do the same thing to Missouri. And I know that the Florida game down in Jacksonville is always wild, or it seems like that, and Georgia's had some bad things happen down there. But the swagger and confidence that Kirby Smart's brought to this team and the way Florida's played this year, I don't see any reason why Georgia can't do maybe not as bad as what they've done to some of these other teams, but they should be able to win that game pretty easily too.
All these upcoming opponents, really, it just seems like they're bad matchups versus Georgia, because
right.
Georgia's defense is playing the way it is, and none of these teams have good offenses.
No, they do not. I mean, the only threatening offense, if you look at the entirety of Georgia's schedule, Georgia Tech obviously provides an interesting challenge. But outside of that game, Auburn's the only team that you're really worried about on offense.
Right, and honestly, I get Auburn's a big rival, but in the big picture, that's not a huge game. Because even if Georgia goes and loses it, if that's the only loss and they end up
They're still going to Atlanta.
Right, to play Alabama with one crack to win that game, win the SEC, and get into the playoff. But yeah, I mean, Auburn is clearly the best team Georgia will face, and that'll be the only game they've got left where they'll be an underdog.
Exactly.
But, it'd be great to win it, and you go into the Tech game, you're undefeated, and maybe roll into Atlanta undefeated, but in the grand scheme of things, if Georgia loses that game, it really, in the playoff world, it's not that big of a deal.
It is not. No, you're 100% correct. All right, we'll jump to the Falcons real quick here. Not really a whole lot to say about this game against the Bills. The Falcons were stricken by the injury bug as Julio Jones and Mohamed Sanu both leave this game. And the referees weren't helping either because, look, Matt Ryan did not have a great day. But when he has still a grasp on the ball when his hand is coming forward and throwing it and they call it a fumble, I mean, there's just not a whole lot you can do about that. And also on an interception that the Bills got where the ball, that one wasn't as egregious. I mean, the ball might have been on the ground. He might have trapped it or whatever, but that doesn't go the Falcons' way either. So when you're having to go against the injury bug and you're trying to throw to receivers on the outside that are like 5'8" or like, you know, 5'10" at best, I think Nick Williams and Taylor Gabriel are the two, like, 1 and 2 receivers at the end of that game. There's just not really a whole lot you can do. So the Falcons are still 3-1. I think you still feel good about things. You just got to hope that the injury bug doesn't hit you like that more throughout the season.
No, but it's back to what I mentioned over the offseason where the Falcons were incredibly lucky last year when it came to injuries, and so that's hard to duplicate, and they're dealing with it now. I mean, it turns out this off week, even though it's still kind of early in the year, is coming at a good time because it sounds like Julio if they had a game Sunday, he probably wouldn't have been able to play.
But he'll be able to play against the Dolphins when they come back.
Yeah, now Sanu's going to be out a couple of weeks, and maybe Beasley will be back for the Dolphins game, but for sure for the Patriots game. But with the Dolphins and Patriots being the next two teams, those are good opportunities for the Falcons offense to kind of get back on track because they've got the two worst pass defenses in the NFL.
Oh, yeah, the Bills are one of the better defenses in the league. And
they've got it's the second or third best pass defense in the league so far.
Yeah.
And the Dolphins rank 32nd and the Patriots rank 31st. So the next two times Atlanta plays, you know, hopefully Matt Ryan can kind of get going again.
Yeah, even Cam Newton, who's had his struggles over the last year and even into this year a little bit, had a big day against the Patriots' pass defense.
Yeah, I mean, New England's defense is horrendous. And, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it is they just suddenly did get old over one offseason. They won one last Super Bowl. Now, they've still got Brady, and that offense is terrific. But Atlanta's offense has struggled the last 2 weeks. But the Lions and Bills both have top five pass defenses.
Absolutely.
And what did Ryan throw? 5 picks in the 2 games?
Yeah, and they're also good at putting pressure on the quarterback. So, I mean, that was a thing there. The Falcons did get somewhat lucky against the Lions, and their luck ran out against the Bills. But Julio Jones is a guy you've constantly got to worry about with injuries because he always seems to be banged up somehow. But at the same time, you know when he's on the field and he can play, he's a difference maker.
And Schrader was still out too.
Right.
So last year, that was another thing, is Atlanta didn't lose a single starting offensive lineman
to injury.
What's
his backup? Is that that? No, Schweitzer's the right guard. His backup is somebody else.
Yeah, Schrader's the right tackle, and it's like a dude they got just from Denver.
That's right. Yeah. And he's
played, I think, at Colorado State.
He's had his struggles as well.
Yeah, I can't think of his name, though.
And that's the thing. You probably don't need to think of him because he's not very good. But that's the thing. I think Atlanta, once they get the offensive line back to full strength, once Vic Beasley comes back, you know, once Julio and Sanu are back, you know, you shouldn't really worry about the Falcons. They just got very unlucky. And again, I mean, I don't understand how that was called a fumble on Matt Ryan. He had the ball like gripped
in
his hand.
Maybe the NFL went, you know what? The rule was applied properly, but probably the Lions did get hosed, so we got to pay the Falcons back now.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? I mean, the rule was applied properly, but still, the Lions should have had a chance. I mean, a game can't end because the refs screw up.
Yeah, that whole 10-second runoff is brutal.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. If I were a Lions fan, I would have been very upset at the way that game ended, but it did benefit the Falcons, so... you know, you take it in stride if you're an Atlanta fan.
So what Atlanta's 1-1 now in the new place, right?
That's right. Yeah. They beat the Packers and they lost to the Bills.
They'll maul the Dolphins, though.
Oh yeah. So I mean, the funniest thing about the Dolphins was, you know, they lost to the Saints in a awful game
and didn't score against a terrible defense.
Right. And the funniest thing about it was they split Jay Cutler out in the Wildcat at one point, and he's sitting there or standing there with like his hands on his hips, and he doesn't even attempt to like run up and block the guy in front of him.
Well, how about when Matt Ryan though tripped and fell?
That was funny. That was funny. Yes,
because then he got up and tried to like play it off.
Yeah.
He got up and like started pointing.
Down.
Yeah.
The dreaded turf monster got him.
Yeah, but that's that stupid Wildcat. I would love to see teams not run that.
Well, it's not even that. It's like if you're gonna run it, pull the quarterback out of the game.
Get him out. Yes.
Like, what are you doing?
No one's covering the quarterback.
No, absolutely not. So. Just one of those things that frustrates you as a football fan. But if you look across the league right now, I mean, it's kind of been flipped upside down a little bit. I know the Chiefs were a playoff team last year, but they look like one of the best teams in the NFL, if not the best team right now. The Rams are looking very good. Jared Goff is playing good football. Their defense is good. Todd Gurley is finally getting blocked for, and you're seeing the results of that. And I didn't understand why the Bills just gave away Sammy Watkins like that, but obviously they just beat the Falcons, so I can't really say anything about it.
And they beat Denver the week before.
They did.
And they got two nice wins back-to-back. Their only losses by six at Carolina.
Could this be the year that somebody finally, not named the Patriots, wins the AFC East? I guess the Dolphins won it the year Matt Castle was.
Yes, that's the only time the Patriots are still 11-5 that year.
Yeah, and they didn't make the playoffs.
That's the only time the Patriots haven't won the division since
Brady took over.
Yeah, because even the two times the Jets made those AFC title games,
they were wild card.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. That is absolutely wild what the Patriots have been able to do. All right, before we get out of here on this edition of the Crossover, I didn't think we would talk about the Braves anymore now that the season's over, because they were terrible and, you know, we'd probably bring them back up at some point if they made like a big signing or something, but they're one of the biggest stories in baseball right now, even though the wild card has already started, the Yankees winning last night in a game that lasted a very long time, but the Yankees beating the Twins there.
I had to turn it off in the... It was the fourth inning, and I looked, and it was like 10:15.
You're like, man, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to stay up for this whole game.
No, absolutely not. But the Braves, John Coppolella being forced to resign due to impropriety in the international market, and it seems like there's been some drama and turmoil within the Braves clubhouse for a while if you read the stories that have come out since this news broke, to where we still don't know exactly what happened, but... reading between the lines, it seems like maybe he got ratted out by some coworkers.
Well, yeah, that was you start to read and find out that, like, well, people didn't like him.
Yeah, around he butts heads with people.
Yeah, around the baseball world, and maybe that's because people knew what he was doing. And, I mean, do we know specifically what it was that he was doing to try and circumvent the rules?
There is some conjecture and some rumors having to do with, like, the way players are paid and things like that, because you're only allowed to spend a certain amount of money on international players. And there was something about how maybe some guys were they might have had like the same agent or something, and so you pay the agent, and then the agent funnels more money to the player.
It sounds like college basketball.
That's exactly what I said when this story broke, when Dave and I were talking about it on the morning show. It's like, this really has the feel of like an NCAA scandal, because you're dealing with really young guys being paid money like under the table and like all this stuff. And if you talk to people that cover baseball closely, I know Bill Shanks has had some things to say about this, but the seedy underbelly that is the international player market, I mean, apparently stuff like this happens all the time. It's just whether you get caught or not,
right,
which is very similar to the NCAA.
And then also there's the signing players that are like way too young.
Right.
But hey, that's, you don't build the number one farm system in baseball, I guess, by playing it straight. That's what, and that's the thing here is, that is what Coppola's done. Mm-hmm. Is build. I mean, between it's the Braves and White Sox, I guess right now are generally viewed as the top two farm systems in baseball, and I guess Coppy played some role in that. But now he's gone, and it also leaves you kind of dangling as to what does that mean for the future of Brian Snitker? Will the new GM bring in a new manager? And it's crazy because you start to ask, well, like exactly at what point is the rebuild going to end and the Braves are going to be back to being a contender again? Because this is the third straight 90-loss season they've had.
Yeah. It's not good.
No.
And that's the thing. I mean, they've got to go a long way now in repairing things in terms of, like, PR, you know, in terms of the fan base. It's like the fans have been sticking around through this rebuild, and now this happens, and it's like, the Braves are going to have to do something to distract fans from this or make it right somehow, you know, maybe a big splash signing or something like that.
Well, the interesting thing is, like, so they had to get rid of the GM, but do they get to keep the players they were underhandedly getting?
That's the thing. The Maiton, the really big Cuban player, Venezuelan, reportedly he is the best prospect to come out of Venezuela since Miguel Cabrera, which is a very big comparison to make at that young of an age.
Right.
I believe he's 17 years old.
Because in the NCAA, you know, they'd be declared ineligible and the school wouldn't get to keep them, but the Braves get to keep them?
No. Apparently, if enough impropriety is found, Kevin Maiton could be named a free agent. This is according to Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports. It says, though the investigation into Maiton's signing is incomplete, it could have the starkest impact on the organization. Maiton is a switch hitter. Scouts called the best amateur to come out of Venezuela, like I said, since Miguel Cabrera 2 decades ago. It says that that he could end up being made a free agent if all of this comes out that there was enough impropriety going on. So if that's the case, and the Braves lose one of the key pieces for the future, because Ronald Acuna right now is the number one prospect in the Braves organization. But this kid, a lot of people are saying, is the next big thing.
Yeah.
So if the Braves lose him, that's not good. So again, what can the Braves do PR-wise for the fans to kind of make them forget about this a little bit? And I think the only real thing you can do is go out there and spend some money. And that's not something they've really done.
And yeah, and then win and put a more competitive team on the field with some guys that you actually want to go out there and watch.
I was thinking more in the short term, like immediately, you know, what do you do? And I think you mentioned Brian Snitker. Bill Shanks reported yesterday that within the next day or two, he will be named, or he will be announced as the manager going forward. But that's not going to really excite the fan base. I mean, they haven't been very good under Brian Snitker. They improved a little bit, but still not great. So what can you do? And I really think right now, in terms of the short term, the only thing they can do is when free agency starts, you got to go out there and commit to signing, whether it's a big pitcher or whether it's a nice bat to add to the lineup. You've got to go out there and commit to something, because right now, I mentioned this earlier, it's a dumpster fire on top of a tire fire. I mean, it's not a good situation.
No. I mean, right now you got Freeman and Albies, I think, are definite in the infield. I mean, Swanson struggled this year. Third base, they could use something new there.
And Ciarte in center.
And Ciarte in center, and that's it. I mean, Kemp and Markakis, those guys are old.
You can move them along. Is R.A. Dickey going to come back? That's another question in terms of pitching staff.
And, pathetically, he ended up the Braves' best pitcher this year.
I know.
But, I mean, you know, oddly at catcher, like Suzuki and Flowers had pretty decent years in that platoon there. But, I mean, long term, though.
You want a catcher. And that's probably the most glaring thing right now in terms of not having it in the farm system and not having it on the team. It's like that future catcher. Who's going to be that guy? Third base is another position that you're looking at. So, yeah, the Braves have a lot of decisions to make.
They could just, you know, one thing, too, they could just do is, put Acuna on the big league roster next year. That's what I think fans want to see him play.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe it was about not starting his clock, as they say. But, yeah, I think next year you got to have a guy like that on the team. But, yeah, it's a big mess right now over in Atlanta with the Braves, or should I say over in Cobb County with the Braves. And you got to believe that under the surface, Kasim Reed is loving this right now because, you know, he wasn't very happy with the way that they left for Cobb County, the mayor of Atlanta, of course, who I'm talking about. So, you know, a little bit of a schadenfreude there, laughing at other people's misfortune.
I'm sure he is. And, because then people were critical of him. How could you not keep the Braves?
Right.
But here they are with this great new stadium, but a bad team and now a scandal.
I was there on the Sunday, I went to the Braves game and then the Falcons game against the Packers on that same Sunday. There was hardly anybody at that stadium on that. I mean, yeah. I know that it was towards the end of the season, but it's a Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, I mean, I think the attraction of a new stadium wears off after a couple games.
Yeah,
and then, because I mean, I was like, when the 49ers played on Monday Night Football, what is this, like the third year of that place?
Nobody was there. Nope. All right, that'll wrap things up for us here on this edition of The Crossover. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more of The Crossover, tune in on Thursday from 4 to 7 as Brame and I will be doing the home team together, doing a little flip-flopping. So looking forward to that. But for Brame, I'm Sam. Thank you so much for listening. Find us on iTunes. Subscribe. It's very easy, and you get all the episodes. And, of course, we're always on 960theref.com. So until next time, y'all take it easy, and go Dogs, go Falcons, and unfortunately, Braves. Just get your crap together.
Yeah, and the Hawks, too.
There you go. Yeah, that's right. Go Hawks. Later.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.